Accession number 24907, Reel 5.
Department, with the help of officers and other officers.
Was the organisation of the engineering department any different from that which you'd experienced on the Royal Oak?
Yes, entirely. Entirely, because on the way out, I was a passenger, nobody's baby. We had no one to guide us, no one, like a hotel porter, taking your baggage into your hotel room and then saying, thank you, sir, and holding his hand out. It was not the same if you were a mere passenger in the ship. Well, that only lasted 10 days. But on joining a new ship, or your first ship, a great many people helped you to find your way about.
So it was different from HMS London, because there was nobody to show you the ropes.
Oh, yes. The chief ERA of the artificers' mess was like a father to very young and very junior artificers. He would take the trouble to show you, for example, where the artificer's bathroom was. Highly important that you should know where to get your first shave, then bumbling around half a dozen other different bathrooms. He would probably give you a walk around the entire department. And he would certainly make you feel at home. And as a very young man, 20, 21, to have an elderly man, 47, 48, to guide and help you, to be a shipmate, was very, very helpful.
Charles Simpson, Reel 5. We were talking about the organisation of the engineering department on HMS London.
Yes.
When you joined her in 1932.
Yes.
Was it any different from the organisation of the engineering department on the Royal Oak?
Not of any consequence. I was still a member of the artificers' mess. We worked the same daily routine. One lot of artificers in one ship carried all their own rules and regulations to the next ship. We mustered in the workshop each morning to be told our daily duties. We kept to the same business of going ashore together. The great difference between my service in the Royal Oak and London was now I was a fully qualified artificer. Fourth class, it's true, but the fifth class had in effect been a prolongation of my apprenticeship. The entire fifth year was spent in training, in being taught the requirements in maintenance and running of different kinds of machinery, and the duties required of me forever and ever, as far as the Navy was concerned, as an artificer. So, fifth class, still something of an apprentice. But having got through that first year, passed the necessary exam, it wasn't just a question of serving time. You had to qualify for what was called your auxiliary watchkeeping certificate. This meant that on your own, you had gone down into every department in the ship, engine room department in the ship, and looked after it alone.
So did your duties as a fully qualified artificer have any, were they different on this ship?
Oh yes. Now that you had become, in effect, a fully qualified artificer, you now became part of a duty watch, which only varied when the chief ERA or an engineer officer required you to switch from one sense of sort of duties to another sort of duties. For example, there are always a number of artificers on board the ship, day and night. There would be days when you were not permitted to go ashore. And this, in the case of artificers, was once every 3 days. You became, out of normal working hours, you became part of the so-called duty watch.
And what did that involve?
That was to attend to any engineering requirements and any firefighting requirements that were to be observed out of normal working hours. So from, shall we say, 5 o'clock in the evening till 7:30 the next morning, you were not only available for departmental duties, you were also available for ship's duties. In the case of a very junior artificer, that meant ship's boats maintenance. Every big ship had a number of motorboats. In my very early days, these were powered by steam engines, reciprocating engines. And during my fifth class time, I had to spend a fortnight manning a steamboat, picket boat, attending to the boiler and the engine, just like a stoker or a leading stoker. Now, out of working hours, motorboats occasionally broke down. Then in that case, a member of the duty watch would be piped on the ship's broadcasting system, duty artificer man picket boat. And then, if duty, you would have to go out along the bar, I've forgotten what it's called, to which the boats were attached, go down the ladder into the boat, find out from the stoker or leading stoker what the problem was, and then rectify it. That was the duty artificer's job.
Was that system of duty watches the same whether you were at sea or in harbour?
In number, yes, but in actual duty, entirely different.
Was it the same whether you were in harbour or at sea, the system of duty watches? Was it the same?
The same number, 1 in 3. Yes.
Whether you're at sea or whether you're
yes.
in harbour.
And artificers kept to the same watch hours as any other member of the ship's company, whether the captain or the most junior ordinary seaman. It was a 1 in 3 watchkeeping system, which split the day into a number of 4-hour watches, and to ensure that you didn't keep the same watch or series of watches each day, 1 4-hour watch of each day was divided into 2 watches of 2 hours each. These were the so-called dog watches, And by having each day a number of 4-hour watches and 2 2-hour watches, that ensured that you did not stop in the same 2 watches day after day after day.
Did that watch system continue when you were in harbour?
Not as far as artificers were concerned. We went day work, so-called. And the working day was from 7:30 until 5 o'clock. Outside of those hours, you became a member of the so-called duty watch, who had only emergency duties to attend to. A machinery that was not functioning well. A dynamo that failed to light the ship's lights. A motorboat engine that had gone wrong.
Did your own attitude towards your career change when you were on HMS London?
It began to change as a dream in HMS Royal Oak, and I did nothing active about it beyond dream and to envy the engine officers their uniform. When I got to London, I had the great fortune to have as my immediate engineer officer, nowadays called divisional officer, but an engineer who was supposed to be looking after my well-being, began to question me about any ambition I might have, and I was then able to admit that I hoped one day to become an engineer officer. There were 2 avenues to promotion. There was an immediate one to commissioned rank. Now there were 4 artificers per year promoted to acting sub-lieutenant E. And the competition amongst all the artificers must have been tremendous, because the examination, both technical and educational, set by the Admiralty, applied to all artificers up to a certain age. In those years, of course, you couldn't have sub-lieutenants aged 40 like you can now. In those days, you couldn't be a sub-lieutenant above the age of 24. So all artificers all over the world, having an ambition to become a sub-lieutenant, and still below the age of 24, could approach the engineer officer to whom they were attached and express a wish to take the examination. Now, long before I got to that point, my particular engineer officer had sounded me out, had said, "Do you have any ambition to become?" And having admitted that I would like to, he then gave me an idea of the scope of the examination and warned me of the amount of time it would take to study. So almost from joining HMS London, I began firstly on what was then called a postal tuition course, which was designed to prepare candidates for acting sub-lieutenant for the examinations. Now, in addition to that, the officers of my department were looking for what were called officer-like qualities. To put it one way, if I had spoken like a Cockney and said, "Yes, mate," it would be unlikely that any engineer officer up to the commandery would have recommended me for promotion. So we had these two things running parallel, equally important: an ability to study and pass the examinations, and the necessary officer-like qualities. On the human side, they would require an ability to speak with an educated accent, to have a very sound knowledge of English literature, to be able to answer questions about stage plays then being shown. And we had to pass through a number of promotion boards, the duty of which was not to assess your engineering qualities, but to assess your officer-like qualities. So you would be asked a number of questions which would reveal what newspaper you read. And it would be no good saying that you read a high-quality newspaper just to show off. The board would ask you searching questions about the daily features in a well-known paper. Who wrote the cinema criticisms? So you would have questions which were meant to really dig into your character and your general knowledge and attitude towards life. And once I got on the ladder, I was encouraged both academically and technically and officer-like. I was encouraged to wear a tie when I was on shore. We had to go ashore in uniform, but once ashore, the artificers were a privileged class in that they had a club in Malta where you could keep plain clothes, civilian clothes, and it was a practice for all artificers to go ashore and change out of uniform into plain clothes. Now, a kindly engineer officer would say, "You're likely to meet one of the officers of the ship when you're ashore, so dress properly. Dress like an officer does. When you meet an officer, raise your hat." Okay? So little tips like that prepared you for the grave and great day when you might, after all these trials, become an officer. So that was the ladder I stepped on in the London.
And what steps did you take on the London to well, ambition?
I was enabled to use an officer's cabin when he wasn't occupying it for private study. The engine officer in charge of a very small workshop on the upper deck for the use of the coppersmith, whose duties produced flumes from his work. So it had to be up in the fresh air. The engine officer arranged for me to use this tiny little workshop in out of working hours, and I would sit there until 2 o'clock in the morning studying to take this enormous promotion exam. some weeks after the examination.
Can I ask you before we move on? You sat the examination.
Yes.
To become a commissioned.
To become an acting sub-lieutenant.
And where and when did you sit the examination?
On board the ship. We had an instructor officer on board the ship. Then the papers were sent to him, and I was closeted in the space that was used as a schoolroom, and sat there alone for 3 whole days, passing the 7 subjects of the exam.
And how long after that did you get the results?
Some weeks. Could have been months.
And how did you find out?
I was sent for by the Commander E, who said he was delighted to tell me that I had passed the qualifying exam, and he showed me and allowed me to keep this particular Admiralty Fleet order. This was posted to the entire Royal Navy, so that every officer in every ship throughout the service could see which of his classmates had been lucky and brainy enough to pass the exam.
Having passed the exam, what was the next step?
The next step was to go to a fleet promotion board. Now, to do that, I had to return home. And I went to a so-called promotion board on board HMS Victory and sat in Admiral Nelson's cabin in front of 3 very senior officers, a rear admiral and 2 captains. And I was the only candidate.
What sort of questions were you asked?
Searching questions of the kind the earliest promotion boards had asked. They really threshed me for several hours, 2 or 3 hours, on my general knowledge, but the purpose of which was to see whether I would fit into a wardroom, whether I would have the literary knowledge, the educational knowledge, the knowledge of plays and books, of the world in general. They asked me what games I played, where a game had a handicap, they would make it most searching and ask what handicap. The sort of questions were, a very famous man called Sir Thomas Lipton was commissioning a number of yachts at the time, and one of the questions was, what is the name of Sir Thomas Lipton's latest yacht?
The America's Cup.
No, this was in the days before America's Cup. They were huge yachts. The King had one called Britannia. He sailed it himself with an enormous crew. What newspapers did I read? And one of the actual questions was, who wrote the cinema criticisms? And at the time it was a woman. And she signed her name to the articles, and she was extra famous because she was one of the very few women who contributed to a paper at that time. Was I aware that living in the wardroom would be an expensive matter? I would need a private income. And was I prepared to meet these additional expenses? And I had to say that I'd had to help support my family, and that I would have to rely upon my naval pay. So that was an awkward moment, but we got through it quite happily. And at the end of this interview, the president of the board dismissed me with a smile and said, "We shall not damn you completely." Now, the successful candidates from all over the world who passed these first promotion boards were passed on to the Admiralty. And the Admiralty, from these reports, selected 8 candidates who assembled at the Admiralty for the final selection board. And it was announced beforehand that only 4 would be promoted. So there was a 50-50 chance of being selected. I was not one of the 4 selected. But there was a compensation prize. There was a rank, you remember, of warrant engineer. And this required artificers to be of a seniority higher and longer than that required for subaltern. There was something like a 3-year difference before you could sit the qualifying examinations. Now, as a consolation prize for not becoming a sub-lieutenant, the Admiralty promoted those failed candidates to warrant and junior officer without further examination 6 months before they would otherwise have qualified to take the exam. So from the moment I left the selection board, disappointed at not being chosen for sub-lieutenant, I was aware that in less than 4 years I would be a warrant engineer. So my next 2 ships I served aware that in a gradually reducing time, I would become an engineer officer.
Did you only have one bite of the cherry, as it were? Could you not go back and go on another promotion board?
You were allowed to remain a candidate, but only up to the age of 24. Now, I was approaching the age of 24 and I had no other chances. In fact, this was actually in 1934.
Did you return to HMS London after your...
No. Having served 3 years and 4 months abroad without coming home, I was then eligible for a home job.
Had all your time on HMS London been in the Mediterranean?
Yes.
So after you'd done your promotional boards, you had your home leave?
Yes.
And you had a home job?
Yes, I was sent then to my first real job, which was to HMS Cockade. No, I beg your pardon, HMS Crusader.
Where was she based?
I was based on Pompey because I was Portsmouth Division. I then became one of 4 artificers, a chief engineering artificer, and 3 artificers of varying seniority. I was the most junior because by that time I'd become a real third class artificer, entitled to take watch in the engine room of a destroyer alone, in charge of the watch, with the leading stokers and stokers on watch with me.
So you've been on a battleship, you've been on a cruiser, and now you're on a destroyer.
I now became a big shot in a destroyer.
Obviously a much smaller crew. Any differences that you'd like to talk about between a cruiser and a destroyer?
Yes. The cruiser, you remember, had eight commissioned engineers and four warrant engineers. A destroyer had only one engineer officer, who happened to be a lieutenant commander in rank. Now, he left the running of the department to the chief ERA. It was the chief ERA who allocated my department responsibilities and who, partly leaving the running of that particular part of the department to myself, visited the department from time to time throughout the day in harbour to find out how I was progressing and to allocate the next job. So the chief ERA ran the engine room department, overwatched and overlooked by the engineer officer. The engineer officer came down to the department by invitation of the chief ERA. So I had charge, to begin with, of the boiler rooms, of which there were two. So any maintenance work in the boiler rooms, I had to do. If a valve was leaking, I had to take it apart and stop it leaking. If an auxiliary machine, like